Welcome back to the MicroConf podcast. I'm your host, Rob Walling. This is a MicroConf tactics episode where we pull audio from one of our most popular YouTube videos. It's called Start a SaaS from $0 in 2026. This video actually popped off, got quite a few views, and it is a lot of my thinking about how to go from zero to a successful SaaS this year. Before we dive in, I'm looking forward to catching up with everybody in Iceland, September 21st through the 23rd. As expected, MicroConf in Iceland has sold out, but producer Sonia has set up a waitlist in case anyone drops out and tickets become available. You can head to microconfeurope.com if you are interested, and realize that all of our events sell out, so don't wait on buying tickets. We have an event in the US next April in Austin, Texas. Those tickets are going quickly, so you can head to microconf.com/US if you want to get your tickets there. And with that, let's dive into how to start a SaaS from $0 in 2026. So you want to start a SaaS, but you don't have any money. No savings, no trust fund, no venture capital. You're probably working a day job, and this is a nights and weekends thing. I've got good news. That's how most successful SaaS companies actually start, including mine. I'm Rob Walling. I've started multiple SaaS companies, all bootstrapped. I've invested in more than 230, both privately and through my SaaS accelerator, TinySeed, and I've written 5 books on building startups. And one thing I know, the amount of money you need to get a SaaS off the ground has never been lower than it is right now. Today, I'm walking through exactly what it takes to start a SaaS company, what costs money, what's free, how to build without cash, and how to find your first customers on a tiny budget. Almost every first-time founder overestimates how much they need to spend on building the product and underestimates how much it costs to get anyone to care. So when you don't have a product, building the product feels like the big expense, but it's not. And I'm going to talk more about that in just a couple minutes. The real expense, both in time and potentially money, is it's finding people who will pay you for the thing you built. This is marketing, sales, sometimes we call it distribution. It's getting it into the hands of people who are willing to pay for it. And when I say this is expensive, it can be money or it can be time, but either way, it costs you something. So if you don't have revenue, don't form an LLC. Don't set up your bank account. Don't order business cards. Don't obsess over your logo because you don't have a business yet. If you don't have a paying customer, you actually have a hobby, not a business. Now, obviously, don't take anything someone says in a YouTube video as legal advice. If you really want to go set up an LLC for specific liability reasons, you can go do that. But in general, setting up a corporate entity, an LLC, an S corp, a C corp, is putting the cart before the horse when you have zero people willing to pay you anything. I see this a lot in applications for my B2B SaaS accelerator, TinySeed. Founders spending 6 months perfecting the product, dotting all the I's, setting up the bank accounts, crossing the T's, but with zero customer conversations. Revenue validates the business. Everything else is theater. If you listed every expense you think you need to start a SaaS, I could probably cross 80% off the list. Do you need government filings? As I said, you don't need to incorporate yet. In the US, you can be a sole proprietorship. I had a sole proprietorship for 5 or 6 years. I was doing 6 figures of revenue, both as a consultant and through products, and I didn't have an LLC. Again, I'm not making any type of legal recommendation about whether you should or should not create a corporate entity, but realistically, I see so many founders making this mistake of doing the things that are easy instead of the ones that are complex and uncertain. Most people formalize a corporate entity after they have real revenue. You might think you have to pay for payment processing, but there's Stripe. It's free to set up, and you only pay once you get paid. How about education? Learning to do this. YouTube is free. This channel plus others. Podcasts are free. I run a podcast called Startups for the Rest of Us. I have more than 830 weekly episodes. I've been recording 52 episodes a year since 2010. There are free book chapters available online, the MicroConf community on Twitter. And frankly, there's a lot of really inexpensive resources too. Most of my books are $10 on Kindle or PDF or audio. You might think hosting is expensive. Vercel has a free tier. Supabase has a free tier. AWS, Google Cloud, they both have startup credits. You can typically run an MVP for well under $50 a month. Then there are AI coding tools. They have free tiers. They cost $20 a month. They're less than most founders spend on coffee. How about your domains? What, $10, $15 a year? The total hard dollar cost for a functional MVP can be under $100 if you're careful and if you do a lot of things yourself. The barrier doesn't necessarily have to be money. It's knowing where to focus. If you can't code and you don't have money, the path to a working product used to be pretty grim. These days, that's no longer the case. I'm gonna walk you through your options from most to least ideal. Option A, you're a developer, build it yourself. This is the best path if you can code. You do it nights and weekends while you have a day job or consulting clients. You obviously use AI coding assistants like Cursor or Claude Code, and they have compressed the timeline dramatically. Weekend tasks now take an evening. It can be realistic to ship an MVP in less than 4 weeks of nights and weekends work. However, the fundamentals are unchanged. Figure out your core use case, you ruthlessly shrink your scope, ship, and you iterate based on real feedback, not on guesswork. Just because you can build more faster doesn't mean that you shouldn't be trying to drive potential customers to use the product so that you can actually iterate on it, because the odds that you're going to build something out of your own head and that you're going to be 100% accurate in terms of it solving a real problem that people are willing to pay for is very, very low. The key advantage for this option is you can maintain and extend the product yourself. A product is never done. People think SaaS products, you pay a developer or you pay an agency to build it, and then that's it. It's never done. And this matters a lot more than people think. Option B is you're not a developer and you can use AI-assisted development. These are tools like Cursor, Claude Code, even Lovable, Bolt, and Replit. Describe what you want in plain English and you get a working and deployed app. But let's be honest about the limitations. Where this works well is for prototypes, for simple CRUD apps, for landing pages with functionality, internal tools, or MVPs for customer feedback. It's a lot harder when you have complex business logic, you have deep integrations with other tools, ongoing maintenance, scaling, code gets difficult to modify at the edges. I think the optimal workflow if you go this path is to build a prototype using AI tools. Then you validate people's willingness to pay for it and you learn to maintain it yourself, or you hire a developer once you have revenue. Now, this option can also be handled with no code. We have a couple companies within TinySeed that we have funded that built a no code product to validate it, and then eventually they hire a developer to rewrite it in full code. So what's the cost with option B? I mean, $0 to $20 a month, maybe $100 if you're gonna hit, you know, one of the more expensive tiers. Your real investment here is time. And option C is to find a technical co-founder. It's a valid path, but you have to bring equivalent value to the team. I have the idea is not enough, especially now that non-technical people can build prototypes on their own. Your job, if your co-founder is writing the code, is to have customer conversations, do demos, make sales, build landing pages, do marketing, try to get people interested in the product. It's everything else but building the product. The best co-founder relationships I've seen come from shared context. Maybe they're in the same industry, maybe they met at MicroConf, maybe they come from the same community. I haven't really seen many work out from a Reddit post. And the best co-founder relationships are complementary. I've seen a lot of two developer teams both want to write code, 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 and no one wants to sell or market. When you get together with a co-founder, one of you needs to head up driving demand and building a marketing and sales engine. And if you're not writing the code, that's you. So you've built the product, and now you need people to know about it and to pay for it. And you have zero marketing budget. Since you don't have any budget, paid ads are off the table. In this case, you have to invest your most precious resource, time. Channels that can work when you're broke are SEO and content. Now, this can take months to pay off, but it compounds. And SEO isn't just Google, right? YouTube is a number two search engine. There are app stores, whether that's the WordPress app store, the Shopify app store, creating content and publishing stuff on Reddit, niche directories, AI answer engines like ChatGPT and Perplexity, all follow the same principles: useful content that answers real questions. And if you can build an SEO engine that ranks in Google, that will provide organic traffic to your site month after month after month. Another approach is cold outreach. It's free and it's a very fast channel. The key is knowing a signal. If without a signal, you're just sending spam. So a signal is an external cue that allows you to know when someone needs your product and needs it now, not someday. Another option is partnerships and integrations. You can co-promote with complementary products. The cost here is your time, but when it works, it produces leads for years. Then we have communities and events. Your vertical customers gather somewhere. meetups, Slack groups, subreddits, Facebook groups, Discord. If you show up and be genuinely helpful, this is a way to reach especially early customers, but also it can be a long-term channel. In a perfect world, I would pick one fast channel like outreach and communities and one slow channel like SEO and content, and I would work both simultaneously. If you work fast only, then you're always chasing that next lead. And if you work slow only, then you're kind of starving while you wait 3, 6, 9 months for the slow approach to kick in. So what about AI and producing content? Well, you can produce more faster, but so can everyone else. So what's really valued these days is original thinking, proprietary data, and real expertise. That's what's gonna make you stand out. 1,000 AI blog posts are probably not gonna beat one piece from someone who knows the problem. I see folks leaning too much on AI these days to create content. So while we at MicroConf and Tiny Seed use AI to help us prep to create content. For example, this YouTube video was outlined with the assistance of AI, but the entire script is not generated by AI. We use our own internal knowledge and our original thinking and frameworks that we feed into AI and help it flesh the edges out. Because if you go to AI and say, outline a video with this title, it's just bland, it's generic, it's the average, and that's not gonna make you stand out in this current age of AI. Nobody warns you that for the first year, maybe longer, you are the entire company. Your sales, your support, your engineering, and marketing. And this can be the hardest part of starting a SaaS. You handle everything yourself at first. You're going to have to. You're going to be doing sales. You're going to be responding to support messages. You're going to be making bug fixes. You're going to be marketing. That's the deal. That's what you've signed up for. The most common path is to keep your day job. You build nights and weekends. It's how I did it, how most successful bootstrap founders do it. Otherwise, you have this runway that you're terrified of running out. And the number of posts that I see on X or on Reddit that are talking about, I ran out of runway because I quit my job and now I have to go get a job. I'm so sad and depressed. It sucks. Don't do that. There are some folks that have savings or a supportive partner or spouse, but the default is to keep your day job until your business replaces it, or at least gets close. That day job, as I said, removes the pressure of a ticking clock. So you can be a bit more patient, you can make better decisions, have less desperation, and make longer term bets. The timeline for this is unpredictable. Maybe it takes you 3 months, maybe it's 6 months, maybe it's 18 months. If you have a finite cash reserve, you start making short-term decisions, but a steady paycheck is an underrated competitive advantage. Every successful startup that I know, from my own, to the more than 230 that I've invested in, to the thousands that I've watched from a distance in the MicroConf and Startups for the Rest of Us communities, got there with three ingredients in different proportions. These ingredients are hard work, luck, and skill. You can't control luck, but you can control how much your outcome depends on it. Hard work is necessary, but it's not sufficient for success. There are plenty of founders that grind on the wrong things for years. So hard work is usually a requirement, but it on its own is not necessarily going to get you to success. Skill is what directs your work. This is where you dive into marketing. You have your product sense that you develop over time, and it's your ability to hear what customers are actually saying, knowing what to build, know how to get it into people's hands. Your goal is to minimize the role of luck by building your skills systematically and putting in as much hard work as it takes. And the single most important skill when you're starting out is learning to spot problems worth solving. Most people think great SaaS ideas come from some flash of inspiration, but they don't. They usually come from paying attention, especially at your day job, when you're watching broken workflows and manual processes every day. I put together a free ebook called The 9-to-5 Audit that gives you a structured way to find SaaS ideas at work. This is not look around and hope something jumps out. It's an actual framework. Head to robwalling.com/ideas to grab it for free.